Welcome to the VGRT Gaming Podcast. I did not release 513 yet because I'd gotten caught up with a new show that I'm doing. And when it became time for me to podcast, a tragedy happened and I was not able to continue it. So instead of doing an entirely new podcast, I'm just going to do the one news item and include it in 513 and just release them together. So this one, what we're doing right now, is being recorded on August 29th, on a Wednesday. The podcast itself was recorded last week. So this is going to be part of the podcast from last week, and we'll do an all-new podcast next week. You know, sometimes this really pisses me off. The recorder won't stop recording, so when I checked it, there was 8 hours of recording on it.
Mm-hmm. I got it to do, like, a couple of days one time. For some reason, I just recorded several days' worth.
Yeah. Pardon. So. Y'all need one that just automatically turns off when the recording stops, like I have.
Yeah, that's what it says it does, but it's lying through its teeth. See, that's the problem. It tells me it stopped recording, but I'm going to tell you something. Unless I reboot the computer, I don't trust it.
It's listening.
VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 513, recorded on August 21st, 2018. Hello,
and welcome to the 513th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 346th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Derrick.
And I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So, you know what's going on right now is Gamescom, so there's a lot of stuff spewing out of that. Mm-hmm. One of these days I'm gonna want to attend Gamescom. I mean, I keep on getting invites to attend, but the problem is it's in Germany.
It's a long-ass way away.
I mean, I have my passport and everything, but it's a little pretty penny to fly to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Someone out there, fly me to Germany so I can attend next year's. Because here's the thing. From what I understand, they have one day that's completely devoted to the press, and the rest of them is open to the public. They still have a section that's locked off just for press. That's mm-hmm. what I want from E3.
Yeah, I mean, like, it used to be that. Well, it used to be all press for E3, but...
Yes.
And happy days are gone.
You miss E3, don't you?
I do. I wish I could have made it this year, because then I would have been able to play Resident Evil 2 and Cyberpunk 2077.
I'm willing to bet you would have gotten in to see the demo for Cyberpunk 2077, which, by the way, still has not been disclosed. You can only hear descriptions of it, but they haven't released anything from it. And I think they have a new trailer for it at Gamescom.
Cool.
So, yeah. Oh, by the way, I decided to pre-order Red Dead Redemption 2.
And oh, what for?
What?
What for? What pulled you into it?
Because I like Red Dead Redemption, and I pre-ordered the $100 version. Mainly because I have $95 on my GameStop card, so I said screw it, I'm just gonna blow my entire credit on it.
So, what comes in that version?
Well, aside from all the DLC that's gonna be in the season pass, I believe they have some physical tchotchkes. I'd have to check it out though. But yeah, I mean, you know. It's a game I'm going to be getting anyway, you know. Let me look up the collector's edition.
I was just thinking, $100. I think that's like.
Well, yeah, it's actually the collector's box. Since I got it from GameStop, I didn't even know it was okay. Ooh, it comes in a lockbox, a metal lockbox with a lock and key.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I remember I got the collector's edition of Fallout 3, and it came with a lunchbox. Comes with a challenge coin. just like Ultima. I remember Ultima came at it. A double-sided jigsaw puzzle. It's 100 pieces. And a bandana. A treasure map. A pin set. Playing cards. A catalog for the fictional company Wheeler, Rawson & Company. And it's 150 pages. And it's replica found in the game itself. And then cigarette cards. Which are basically collector's cards. So yeah, I think I made the right decision on that.
It's a cool box. I would take it for the box alone.
Yeah. It's a completely red box with black metal, and it has the logo on the front.
Yes, and I would use that pen set as Monopoly pieces.
How many games do you know come with a jigsaw puzzle?
Right?
Not many.
Yeah, so, yeah, October 26th, that's 2 months from now. So, yeah, it's coming up. Are you guys going to be playing Red Dead Redemption 2?
Oh, no, for sure.
No, I'm saving up for Dragon's Quest 11.
Is that coming out this year? I thought it was coming out, like, in January.
It's coming out in September.
Oh, okay. Well, then guess what? You'll be able to tell us all about it.
Yes. Hmm.
Before we start talking about what games we've been playing, why don't you, since we mentioned... Actually, you mentioned this to me in Skype that you were actually... Was it actually in the podcast last week? We're talking about
Graveyard Keeper.
Yeah, so you actually had had hands-on time with the final version, didn't you?
Yes, both TJ and I have been playing it. And it's kind of like Harvest Moon.
Or Stardew meets, Valley, from what I understand.
Yeah, well, yeah, Stardew Valley, Harvest Moon, those kind of games. And it's been given a kind of macabre twist because you're burying bodies in a graveyard and tending to a graveyard. But you're also farming and collecting materials and going to town and doing quests for people. And you're going exploring a dungeon if you want to. I haven't really explored the dungeon that much. I think you get a path, you get choices on how you want to handle situations. So I think there is a good path, maybe a evil path, because there was an inquisitor that went to burn a witch, and I refused to be friends. I was like, no, I'm not your friend. I don't want anything to do with this. I haven't eaten any of the flesh that I've harvested, although I do plan on selling it, so as soon as I get a royal stamp. But it's been a really fun game, and I'm kind of surprised at how addicted I've gotten into it, because I usually don't play these games that much.
The graphics look exactly like an Amiga Amiga graphics. They look exactly like those kind of games that you've seen on the Amiga.
I feel like it's better than an Amiga. I would say PlayStation 1 2D graphics.
No, I'm talking about, you know, when you look at the text and the boxes and the way the game is laid out, it just reminds me so much of an Amiga game.
I guess so. I mean, it's nice and clean. It doesn't have that fuzzy font that some people like to do. It's a nice, crisp, clean text. I've seen it on other things other than an Amiga, because I've never seen Amiga. But so I didn't really think of Amiga. I thought of PlayStation 1 2D graphics.
Yeah, but there were a bunch of games in the Amiga which looked almost exactly like that, you know. And they were always third-party sort of indie games, you know, for the mid-90s. So how about you, TJ? I think you're reviewing it, aren't you?
No, I received the game, and I have been playing the holy heck out of it. It's very fun. I think I'm a little bit further than Scott got, because I've gotten to the point where I got a royal stamp, and I have begun. Let me tell you, there is a lot of things you can harvest off of a human body that you can then sell to medieval peasants.
How do you sell it to them? That's the problem I haven't been able to do.
So you got to get your hands on the royal stamp, either legitimately by becoming a better citizen, or illegally by doing dungeon stuff for Snake. Who, yeah, you bet I hung out with Snake in the tunnels. Tunnel snakes for life.
Call him Biscuit.
So I've been hanging out with Snake, setting up sacrificial altars, killing cultists, and bringing their blood back to him.
Hold on! Stop! Cultists?
Yep. There's cultists hanging out in them dungeons.
What kind of cultists? They're not Cthulhu cultists, are they?
They're just kind of crazy people that attack you and drop bloody nails that you need for your rituals.
Want to see how this game ends, because you talk to the astrologer, and he tells you you need to construct a special laser at the portal to activate it, and he knew some dude that once did it, but he couldn't remember him, and I don't know. I don't know if you're in a purgatory limbo or something, or if this is just all in your head and you're in a coma trying to wake up. So it's really...
Let's not bury the lead here. The way the game starts is that you are a regular guy in modern times, and then you get hit by a car, and you're mm-hmm. back in medieval times, and you don't know how you got there or what's going on. So there's the chance that... So they tell you that there's this portal that could help you get home, but until then, you're the new graveyard keeper.
Right.
So it could be just like a fever dream coma in your head, or it could be real and magical and all that jazz.
Maybe you're in limbo, and the reason why you're taking part, you're in a graveyard, is because you're in a graveyard.
I mean, I'm leaning towards the first side, because there is a donkey that's a straight up communist, and he's not even hiding it. He is completely a socialist donkey.
What year is this supposed to be taking place in?
Medieval times.
There was no communism in medieval times.
This donkey is a communist, and he straight up says it straight up to you.
Okay.
Why does he demand a wage?
because he won't be crushed by the proletariat.
But that term wasn't even around in the Middle Ages.
There's a lot of weird things going on.
I think
in
someone
game.
Watched too much. What's it called? Life on Mars.
It's a crazy game, but it's really fun.
And there's a talking booze hungry skull that's your friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
is his name Mort?
No, Gary.
Do you know what I'm referring to when I say is his name Mort?
Yeah. No.
It's Planescape Torment. When you play Planescape Torment, which is the Planescape AD&D game that was released a long time ago, some mm-hmm. called the best book you'll ever play. Your first companion is a floating talking skull named Mort, and he's always wisecracking.
Right. So far I'm consistently impressed with the way. Like, okay, you guys know my gripe with games like this. I don't like chores, and I don't like it being blatant that it's chores. The way that this ends up not being chores is that there's enough reward and there's enough branching direction that I feel like I'm always moving on a different route to do something else. Like
there's an agency on where you want to go.
Well, there's also like 6 days of the week, and each day is important to a certain citizen in the town, and so you have to like be on the run if you're gonna catch up to this person on this particular day. You have to plan towards that, and like I've missed a day and just like kicked myself in the pants, just like being like, ah, God, I have to wait 6 days for this person to show up. But you can actually sleep through a lot of it and move time pretty quickly. Yeah. So it's not that much of an issue, and there's always things to do. So, like, the whole chores part of the game doesn't really bother me as much as it does in a game like No Man's Sky, because it's not the game holding my hand and demanding that I do this stuff. It's, oh, I realize I need this. I better go get this. And if I need that, then I'm going to need this. And unlocks this opportunity, so now I can do this. And it just feels very natural as far as just
that
like...
sounds a little huge. Like Aquanautica?
I think the difference is that Harvest Moon, Stardew Valley, you have a time limit, you know? You have a year to do this. And in this game, it's just do it at your own pace. Whenever you get there, you get there. Don't worry about it. There's nobody with a guillotine over your head saying, you know, if you don't do it in a year, you know, or something. So there's no pressure. You just do it at your own rate, and you just have fun, you know? If you want to go exploring the mines, if you want to go... just wherever, you know, just do whatever you want. And The only thing that annoyed me was the Peanuts adult voice, text voice that I didn't like. I had to mute that. It was annoying me. But everything else has been awesome.
I think it's endearing. I don't mind it. It's kind of funny for some of them.
I don't know. It's just like the tone. It's offsetting, and it just annoys me.
By the way, I don't know if we mentioned this, but it's developed by Lazy Bear Games, and they're also the guys who did Punch Club.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I can see that. There's a lot of... I guess aesthetically it's quite different, but there is a little bit of that style just in there that you can see it if you look closely enough. So that's cool. I like them. And Scott's right, you aren't on a time limit, so there's nothing telling you you have to get anything done in a hurry. And yet at the same time, there's so much to do that it does kind of feel genuinely and almost naturally hectic.
These graphics are so friggin'... either Amiga, or actually, you know what? They have the same sort of style that you might have seen in Ultima 7 as well. They have that same graphic style to it.
No, these graphics are pretty nice.
Right.
Yeah, but the way they're made, you know, they're slightly pixelated. I would say beyond 16-bit, more like 32-bit graphics.
That's why I said PlayStation. That's why I said PlayStation level.
But I'm graphics. Just saying it's not. It's more like, you know, like early DOS or Amiga games. Just has that look. It's more computer. It looks more like a computer game than it does a console game. Okay. As for me, I gave up on Far Cry Primal because when I got to the boss that's for the Udom, you have to go through the here's the thing. One thing, I actually conquered that area once, but since I didn't have the stuff that allows you to survive poison gas, I had to abandon it, and then I had to fight the same friggin' battle again. That was one strike. But when I played against that boss, he's just normal human, but for some reason he's only injured if you have stalactites fall on him. And when I made stalactites fall, and it didn't hit him, but it hit my cave bear... and it wasn't even the cave bear, it was the special scar cave bear. I said, that's it, I'm done. I pulled the CD from the drive, tucked it in the Gamefly, envelope, and just tossed it in the mail. I was done. You know, do you remember, if you ever watched Zero Punctuation, Yahtzee at one point is talking about the Surge. That sci-fi version of Dark Souls, and when he fell through the thing and everything that he was undone by a glitch, he said, that shit's bollocks, and that bollocks is shit, I'm done, you know? That's the way I reacted.
That's a real shame, because it seemed like you were having fun with that game.
I was having
until
fun,
that point.
But here's the thing, you know, there's things wrong with it. Here's the biggest thing that's wrong with it. The pace is shit. It is everything wrong with an open world game. Because I would have preferred a more linear narrative, like Batman Arkham Asylum. You know, in which you have some leeway, but you're basically doing, you basically have a story that you're following. Here, you don't know where the fuck you're supposed to be. Like, I was getting really into advanced areas because I could survive, but then they'd have these artificial, you know, things in which I couldn't pass because, guess what, you didn't reach that point of the story. What do you mean? What part of the fucking story do I have to... I'm not going to tell you. Fuck you! What the hell? I had to go into a forum and find out which things did what so I can get what, you know? It was it's maddening, you know? And that it's called lazy. And Ubisoft has become one of the laziest publishers there is. Everything is an open world game because open world games are easier to program, period.
I mean, depends on the game. It depends. It also depends on the department, too. I mean, Ubisoft Montreal, I think they're killing it. But whoever's handling a lot of their open worlds, I would tend to agree with you.
They're all open worlds now. What are you talking about?
Rainbow Six Siege is not an open world game.
Yeah, that's the exception that proves the rule.
Right, but I'm saying...
they're going for something. Ubisoft is going for that sweet, sweet esports money. You know.
Sure, but that's what I'm saying.
Who's going to make esports out of Far Cry?
No, Odie. But that's what I'm saying, is that I it's not all Ubisoft, but I would tend to agree with you that they sure do those games.
I'm tired of it. I, you know, at least Red Dead Redemption is an open world game, but at least I know Rockstar knows how to. Well, I'm not going to say they know how to pace a story, but I'm going to say that they know how to dole out information so that you're not rushing ahead further than you should be.
Yeah.
There's some indicators. And like I said, I haven't played Grand Theft Auto 5 yet. We just talked about this last week, you know. At some point, I will try Grand Theft Auto 5.
You know? Rockstar is at least good in giving you, okay, here's your main quest, but if you want to do these side quests or this other stuff, go on and do it. But here's the main quest when you're ready for it, so you know where it is and where to go.
And, you know, here's the thing. You know, Breath of the Wild may be way too open world for me, but at least if you go in the place where it's really hard, you're going to get killed in 2 seconds, and you'll get the idea, yeah, I shouldn't be going that direction. Same thing with Fallout New Vegas. If you travel north, guess what? You're going to get your ass handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
You better go south, because going north, yeah, you'll die.
Challenge mode. Challenge accepted.
There you go, TJ. That's
but
right.
Even if
That's
you
right
do, even if you challenge yourself, there's no... They don't all of a sudden put an artificial barrier saying, oh, you can't do this until you have this. But how do I get that? We're not talking.
No, but you're right. There are a ton of people that are just like, you go north, you're going to die.
Yeah, but if you go north and you somehow survive, you'll still be able to move forward with the story.
Uh-huh.
You know, if in Far Cry Primal, it's like, I'm doing all this stuff, but then all of a sudden you can't do this. Why? You don't have the antidote yet. But how do I get the antidote? I don't know. Oh, and by the way, you can't complete the mission, and we're going to reset the mission, even though it took you 3 tries just to do it. What? That broke me. I don't know what game I'm getting next. And Far Cry Primal could have been better, but it desperately needs a second pass. It's like a rough draft of a movie.
You should do an Ubisoft game that doesn't suck, like Mario and the Rabbids.
I already play XCOM. I don't need to play Baby XCOM.
Oh.
It's funny that you cannot have a party that doesn't include at least one rabbit, which is weird. You must have
but
one... I know why, actually, because here's the thing. Your entire motivation for killing the rabbits is that they're acting goofy. So basically you're committing genocide. So you better have some other rabbits to be your race traders. To kill all the other rabbits.
I mean, at least they're sassy and full of toot about it.
What, you don't think the cavemen in Far Cry Primal are sassy?
Are they? I don't know.
I mean, I was having fun when I got my owl to start dropping insanity bombs. That was fun, just watching them go nuts in the thing and just kill each other. But yeah, I just got... Yeah. And also, I looked up, a lot of those skills are really useless, and they shouldn't even bother with it in the game. And I'm thinking, well, if that's true, then why even have them in the friggin' game? Just have them as a part of your normal level up, you know? Do the old level up thing. You're level 1, you're level 2, you're level 3. Fuck that. You know? At least at Batman Arkham Asylum, you'll get a new gadget which will allow you to access a new area. So you don't have to go through the pain of finding, oh, you needed this to get there. But I was allowed to go in. But yeah, well, to complete it, you have to have that. It's not like you have to do the entire mission inside a thing in Batman Arkham Asylum, and all of a sudden it says, oh, by the way, you need the goop that turns things into ice. But why didn't I get it a minute? Well, because you didn't earn it. Although, I'm going to say, you know, they started hedging in that way with Batman Arkham City. Remember, you can't glide until you do those stupid little tests, you know, the virtual reality tests. Fuck that.
Yeah, I mean, there's similar issues in Graveyard Keeper where, like, basically you go as far as you can on one path and you realize just, like, there's no way forward and it doesn't really handhold you when it comes to the technology. But,
yeah.
But there's always a way to move forward elsewhere.
That's kind of different. I mean, it's the same thing with Batman Arkham Asylum. You're not going to be able, you know, you'll see things that you can't access. Like, you'll see things that normally you'd have to have the grapple gun you know, to take down a wall, right? And it's up high, so you can't just use the grapple gun. You need a special type of the grapple gun. Mm-hmm. You'll know I'm not able to access it, so you're not going to bother. You'll think, you know what? At some point, I'll be able to do it. Not true in Far Cry Primal. Like I said, I'm not going to continue discussing it, but pacing is something in a game that you really need. See, that's why a lot of people can stand Breath of the Wild, you know, because it's paced well. You know where you can't go, you know where you can go, you know, and the game will instruct you on, you know, will level up with you, unless you want to be suicidal and want to try and do the hard parts first. You know, and there are people who do speed runs who can actually do it, you know, just get past that one creature, and guess what, I ended the game in 10 minutes.
Right, and even if you don't want to end the game in 10 minutes, even if you want to end the game in like 100 hours... you can just go dick around until you run into something you actually need for the game to continue forward.
Well, that's what I did with Middle Earth Shadow of War. And the bonus of doing that is that by the time you finish dicking around, you're so powerful, it becomes easy because, you know, you took the time just to buff yourself up and just say, oh, yeah, he's a prompt. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Just walk into the woods. It'll be fine. Don't do that in real life.
Anyway. So, before we get into the news, I pointedly sent you some videos. We're going to discuss them just a little bit. So, one of the things that I sent was... oh, damn it. No, not The Simpsons. Let's talk about World War Z. What's interesting is that...
too.
Here's the thing. World War Z, a lot of people are complaining it's... well, it's Left 4 Dead, but the thing is that the zombies in Left 4 Dead aren't really fluid like it is in that game. It'll be very interesting to see how they're able to handle that many, because if you ever saw the movie, the zombies actually act like a force of nature. They act like water, you know. They just roll in. And one of the things I liked in that video is they show, well, guess what? You're not going to be safe up there because they're going to just climb all over each other and create a natural ladder, like ants.
Mm-hmm. I mean. If we're not going to have another Left 4 Dead, this looks like a good opportunity for something out of the ordinary that will make for, like... it'll make for that thing that we didn't know that we were missing for the last few years,
you're not into Vermintide?
Oh, no. Vermintide is great, and I hear good things about it all the time. I actually would love to play that game, but I don't think my computer can handle it.
Well, it's on console, too, now. The problem with Vermintide is it feels sort of loose. It doesn't have the same cohesive structure that Left 4 Dead had. Left 4 Dead was tight, and Left 4 Dead 2 as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Vermintide feels a little loosey-goosey. It doesn't feel, you know... and part of that is that, you know, there's more melee in Vermintide than you have in Left 4 Dead. I mean, you have some melee in Left 4 Dead when you get the cricket bat or the chainsaw or whatever, or the crowbar. But most of the game is shooting the zombies, you know. In this one, it's a combination, and ranged attacks are deliberately made so that they're a little more, they're slower, you know, to charge up and fire. So, it's a different type of game.
Yeah, and I mean, this looks like it's going to be. It looks like it's going to pull off that sort of. It looks like they're going to go for a narrative here. I don't know if it's going to be similar to what Left 4 Dead did, where it sort of carries on from one to the next, and they sort of have a loose story going on, or if it's going to be like an actual narrative that carries on, like an actual story. Like Dead Island.
Yeah, I would like AI partners who aren't complete and utter morons.
Oh, yeah. That was
there's a problem in Left 4 Dead and on through. It's hard to do.
But the destructive capabilities look really fun in this game just because there's so many zombies and so they give... like, everybody who played Left 4 Dead knows you only get, like... the biggest weapon you get is, like, an automatic shotgun. But this, it looks like you're packing, like, heavy machine guns, grenade launchers, and all the better because there's a ton of zombies in World War Z.
You know what they need, actually? They need the pipe bombs that attract zombies. I just want to see what happens if you have one of those in this game. Mm. All of them also running to the pipe bomb, except instead of like a couple dozen, there's like a couple hundred.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the game that I know that you probably have a real big chubby for, and that's Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
This one is going to be interesting. There's like so many different samurai games coming out.
Yeah, but this one is sort of like, I'm going to say like more like Neo than Dark Souls, except let's say Neo mixed with Ninja Gaiden.
So Ninja Gaiden.
There's definitely some Ninja Gaiden in there.
Because Neo is very much like Ninja Gaiden.
Well, made by the same people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Neo really was like if you took all of the things of all the functionality and interfaces of Dark Souls, then you just made it like more Ninja Gaiden-y.
Well, let me put it this way. It's like Ninja Gaiden, except it has a Dark Souls aesthetic, because you're basically playing a corpse in the game.
Uh-huh.
And
which is a very Dark Souls thing.
Yeah, I mean, but in this case, it's like your right hand, you can see your arm bones, and your left right hand is, and you cannot die. You resurrect. I think there's obviously a way to permadeath you, but it's like... It's taking the fact. It's just. It has a great atmosphere that, you know. I mean, Neo tried it. It was set in the Sudoku Jedi, but it never really felt like it. This one is extremely Japanese. And by that, I mean the setting.
Yeah. And. Okay, so, like, when I look at this. It's the most mobile-looking From Software game I've ever seen, as far as the protagonist goes. Like, the bosses are always had,
you know,
like, a ton
that's
of
right.
mobility.
It's from Software. So now what I'm thinking is, do you think From Software saw Neo and told Team Ninja, oh, yeah? Watch us. Watch what we can do.
That is exactly what happened, because Neo is, like, a much more stylish Dark Souls. You got, like, so much faster movement, so much more impactful counters, and then you got like all these god spirits that you can collect throughout the game, and they each add like a different stat boost and different special attack to you, and there's so many cool weapons to use in the game. So I can totally see totally see From Software seeing Neo being like, oh yeah. You guys gonna try to do that whole Japanese thing, huh? Betcha we can do it better.
I'm certainly more interested in this game than the World Z game. Looks like a cool fighting game, and just have to see how it comes out.
Interested to see what the story is like. I mean, the combat looks great, but I'm more interested in the story, because the story they're setting up in that trailer sounds very intriguing.
I'm nervous about From Software stories because historically speaking, From Software stories are hot garbage that's always in the environment far more than it's ever actually in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, traditionally speaking, Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3 and Demon's Souls, it's kind of like the story happened before you got there and you're just sort of picking up the remains. This looks like it's actually going, like it's actually impactful. There's something big going on as you're going through it. I have a little bit of optimism.
To me, like something's already happened, and you're starting in the middle rather than afterward.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a little bit of optimism, but man, From Software loves being vague and bullshit about their story elements.
Well, let's segue into Life is Strange too. They finally released the story trailer. So you know at least what the story's about, and apparently it's about this teenage kid who accidentally kills a police officer and is on the run with his younger brother.
Dang.
In Seattle.
Of course. We're all cool indie hipster things happen.
And does he have like an ability or something? Because he was kept saying he couldn't tell his brother the truth, whatever that is.
I think it's real interesting how Don't Nod
moved so far away from like the supernatural elements of Life is Strange to just like telling a slice of life story.
Because well, like a slice of life on the run.
Yeah. But I mean, like it's still sort of this rustic, just people and engaging with other people type thing that Life is Strange has become kind of known for. As you opposed know,
this sort of reminds me of Grave of the Fireflies. I don't think this is going to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they're going to meet up with that blonde kid from the teaser game that they released.
I see what Scott is talking about. It seems like there is some sort of... it looks like there's a moment of premonition, yeah, and I wonder what that's psychic. About. Which would be interesting, because, I mean...
Well, wasn't Zoe psychic in the first series?
Zoe's thing was that she could see an incident occur and then go back to before it happened and change things, like basically talk to people differently, move things around in the environment, and try to circumvent the something bad happening. Basically, she could jump back.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking, a moment. It's like, he seems to be psychic.
So, I don't know what's going to be going on with this one, but it would be interesting if they went back to the supernatural elements that were missing from, like, Before the Storm and that prequel they did.
I just, you know, it's... This game just screams out, yeah, we're going to make life hell for these two characters.
Life is strange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking, yeah, in the final Walking Dead series, at least Clem's an adult now. I mean, she's tagged along with, but at least she's the adult now. They should have just skipped from season one to this thing and just altogether just skipped season two.
Yeah, no doubt. You would have missed out on a whole lot of weirdness about the having to deal with a child that has to become that hard that fast.
Or everybody else treating her like an adult. That was the weirdest part. You've got to do this, Clem, even though you're 11 years old. Oh, we have some really strong guys in their mid-20s, early 30s, but no, only a 11-year-old girl can do it. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news, and this is something that I know that you're probably excited about, TJ. Devil May Cry 5 arrives in March, and this comes from Polygon. Today at Gamescom, Capcom showed a new gameplay footage of Devil May Cry 5 and confirmed a release date, March 8, 2019, for Nero and Dante's next adventure. The company also revealed new details about Devil May Cry 5's gameplay, specifically around Nero's quote-unquote Devil Breakers. Devil Breakers are mechanical arms crafted by Nero's ally Nico that grant the Demon Slayer special powers. There are 8 standard Devil Breakers, Capcom said, including an Overture, an electrified arm that shocks enemies, and the Gabrera, which generates intense heat that can be shot out of in a powerful shockwave. As seen in the gameplay trailer, Nero's arms also let him snatch enemies with a grappling hook and surf through the air on his rocket-powered limb. You know, I'm going to say this right now. You know, Platinum, are you sure you don't want to make another Bayonetta game? Because this is definitely Bayonetta stuff, especially when they say Nero still has his Red Queen sword and Blue Rose handgun at his disposal for more traditional Devil May Cry action. For those who don't know, Bayonetta has Scarborough Fair, which is a quartet of guns, you know, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Mm-hmm. Finally, Dante makes a brief appearance in the game Devil May Cry 5's new trailer, brandishing a fancy new weapon of his own, his motorcycle. Dante's bike isn't just a mean of transportation, it can be split in half and used as a pair of chainsaw-like melee weapons. Yeah, that's something by Platinum. That's something you normally see with Bayonetta. Devil May Cry 5 is coming to PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One next year.
I mean... I loved it. Yes, I did. First off, I like Nero, which I enjoy playing him, and I'm glad to see him back because
the Bayonetta Devil May Cry crossover. Damn it! They keep on teasing it so much. Stop teasing it. I want to see Nero. I mean, I want to see Dante and Bayonetta interact.
I mean, like, I love it. They've been doing outlandish weapons for a while. I mean, like, in Devil May Cry 3, they literally had an electric guitar that that blew people away. But the motorcycle transforming into two clubs, was quite a fun little surprise. It's going to be more Devil May Cry. I'm sad they don't have that Nero doesn't have his original sort of just like extendo arm grabby attack that he had, but it'll be interesting to see those other arms that he's been that they're teasing with this, the Devil Breakers.
TMC is now $5 used. I think I'm going to pick that up.
But people will tell you it's the worst one of the series, and they're wrong.
The best gameplay. As a matter of fact, Devil May Cry 5 takes its gameplay from DMC, and it's just going to put the character that everybody wants.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out. I wonder how they're going to reintroduce Virgil, because they do it every single time in every single game.
I wonder if they're going to do the same thing from DMC, in which you go into the, you know how you go underneath, you know, you have the reflection of the city, and you go on to the underneath the city, you know, and you go on to the reflection itself.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a cool. I hope they include that aspect, because you know they had a lot. The developers love doing DMC, so you can bet that they're just going to take what they took from DMC and put a lot of it in Devil May Cry 5.
No doubt, the biggest thing of Devil May Cry in general is just to make it like a B-movie action flick, which, from those trailers, looks like it's totally going to be that.
You know, they desperately need to have an appearance by Travis Touchdown. I think Travis Touchdown would be such a fit for that universe.
You're crossing too many universes.
So what? Hey, look, you saw Jump Force? Come on. Yeah, get One Piece in there, too.
Bayonetta, Travis Touchdown, and Dante meet in the same game, the universe will implode.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, DJ.
Cyberpunk 2077 quests similar to The Witcher 3 in terms of playtime and complexity from PC Gamer. Speaking to PC Gamer at Gamescom, quest designer Patrick Mills says logic was crucial when crafting The Witcher 3's DLC quests. He says he and his team would often ask themselves if certain in-game actions made sense, both in relation to quests and the game's overarching plot. You've got a quest giver, you've got a person over here, but you could just go straight to that second person and take the quest from them and do it that way, says Mills. The process has gotten even more complicated in Cyberpunk. There are more multiple ways to resolve individual quests. Before, there were usually a few ways, a couple decision points. Now there are whole different ways to play the quest. I'll say it's a lot of work. They're very complicated. But we try to think, if the player says, can I do this? Then yeah, actually you can. And then you deal with the consequences. That's part of choice versus consequence. Don't just have that in the dialogues, but in the gameplay as well. At this stage, Mills isn't able to determine how often Cyberpunk 2077's most involving quests pop up, but does liken them to The Witcher 3. Mills also told PC Gamer CD Projekt Red has just not been ready to share Cyberpunk 2077's elusive E3 demo footage publicly.
You know, that reminds me, and I'm pretty sure Scott will say the same thing, it's sort of like Pillars of Eternity 2, in which there are so many ways to resolve the quests that, you know, it's sort of like, can I do this? If you can do it, it'll allow you to do it, and say, okay, you did it, now this happens.
Mm-hmm. I think of the quests that you went on that I went on when I did the Blood and Wine DLC for Witcher 3, and yeah, if
which by
anywhere,
the way was the weakest quests of the series, but they were still really good.
You go to heck.
They were the weakest.
I liked that DLC. I liked the painting on
here's
the hill.
The thing. It was fun DLC, but it was also the weakest of the DLC in terms of just gameplay alone.
But
it was weak. It doesn't mean it was bad. Here's the thing: it's sort of like getting a B+ when everything else got A's.
I don't know. I think of that, and I think if it's anywhere near as complex as that, this game is going to be a blast.
Scott.
Mm-hmm. Cyberpunk. I don't know. Again, I'm. focusing on other games right now, but it does look really interesting. Now, I'm going to probably watch some Let's Plays to see how this one plays out.
Did you ever play the Witcher games, Scott?
I have played the first two.
Okay. You played the first two, but it's the third one that really, broke through. Sort of like, I saw The Phantom Menace and I saw The Clone Wars before you actually saw The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I think we're still questioning whether or not this will even make it into this generation of consoles, right? Like, it's probably not going to make it before 2020,
no,
right?
Here's the thing, the tech in that game, from what I understand from people who actually saw the game, there's no way the Xbox One or PlayStation 4 are going to be able to handle it.
So
2020.
We're probably looking at 2020, so we've got time. Which, all the better. I'm happy to wait for a bit for this gem to be completely polished.
And I will have my Red Dead Redemption lunchbox by then. Scott, next item.
Okay. So speaking of consoles and upgrades, rumor Nintendo planning big Switch upgrade. This is from Express UK. New rumor suggests that Nintendo might be eyeing a significant upgrade for the Switch console. It appears this information was first shared by video games journalist Marcus Sellers on Twitter, where a list of possible stats was shared. This included the new console having 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigabytes of internal storage, and dynamic scaling up to 4K. It is also reported by Sellers that select third-party games might be released on the upgraded console, but not on older models. However, all Nintendo-produced games would launch on both, according to the information posted. It should be noted that this information does not come from Nintendo themselves, and the tweets concerning the news have been pulled. So this is just wild speculation.
It does make sense. Because here's the thing. All these games that are coming out from third-party from Nintendo, it's sort of like, what are we going to do with 32 gigabytes of RAM? You know, we need a larger storage space. And while Nintendo is perfectly fine to squeeze everything down to small things, you know, if you want large games, you know, major games coming to your console, you need to have room on that hard drive. I mean, that's the bait. And you can't just keep on plopping in, you know, you can't just keep on relying on people to have SD cards. You know, at some point, you're going to have to be able to save data on the thing and all that stuff. And here's one of the other things that's a problem for the Switch. Games can be ported easily between Xbox and PlayStation, but they cannot be ported easily to the Switch. So you have to make it worth it for the game developers.
For sure. Now, granted, like, a lot of games have seen an entirely new lifespan on Switch. I mean, you got Hollow Knight, you got Dead Cells.
Yeah, but you see here, you can enlist those games that they're not really demanding, you know.
Right.
In order to have Skyrim is a 7-year-old game. Oh, wait, no, it was released in 2011. Because remember, 11-11-11, it's a 7-year-old game.
Well, then you've got Fortnite, and then you've got...
which are dramatically scaled down.
Yeah, and my understanding is that, I don't know, the 4K is going to be great, but scaling isn't all that great.
No, especially the internal storage is the real... It isn't going to be in 4K, it's going to be upscaling. So what happens is you take normal graphics and you just make them able to be crisp on the 4K. That's all it means.
Right, but like, I wonder if that's going to be on the handheld and on the TV, because I don't know. The native on the handheld can't be much more than, like, I don't know, 720 or something like
that's
that.
That's why they said dynamic scaling up to 4K when you're running it through the TV. Like I said, the 128 gigabytes is probably the biggest thing. That's probably, mm-hmm. You know, you can scale down games fine. You know, you can release them in 420 resolution, 720 resolution, no one cares. You got to have the storage space, especially if you have an eShop.
So that kind of sucks for those who already bought it, because then they won't be able to get that hardware upgrade.
Well, like I said, but it makes sense that Nintendo would make sure that all their games, their first-party games, would be for both.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing. You know that GameStop and other people are going to have trade-ins anyway, if you really want to do it. You know, if they have a new SKU, it's like, trade in your old Switch for the new Switch to 2.0 and save like $50 or $100 or something like that.
Yeah, they did do that with the 3DS. They came out with a new 3DS that has, you know, a slightly more advanced features and does the amiibo scanning and all that. Well, so if you want to go up, you can do that.
I got my $100 from GameStop because I traded in my launch Xbox One for the Project Scorpio. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Soul Calibur 6 story mode and DLC character announced. This comes from IGN. Bandai Namco announced Tuesday the addition of Tira as a new Soul Calibur 6 DLC character and revealed the Libra of Souls story mode. Libra of Souls is the second announced Soul Calibur 6 story mode and allows players to create a custom fighter. The character creation tool lets players choose from 16 races and a myriad of facial features, body types, hairstyles, weapons, armor, and fighting styles. Once created, players will take their fighter on a quest to stop quote-unquote evil new mastermind from gathering the Soul Edge shards. Characters from the main storyline, Chronicle of Souls, as well as the player's custom fighters will appear throughout the Libra of Souls. Matches in this mode also have their own specific rules that Bandai Namco says will let players shape their own path. Is this sounding a little bit like the Injustice 2 multiverse mode? Just a little bit.
A little bit, but Bandai Namco has had the a few things like this in previous Soul Caliburs. Like, their character creation has always been
I mean, I'm just saying about the story mode itself. Fighters from Libra of Souls can also be used in online casual and ranked matches, which is going to be interesting when you have ranked matches with these custom characters. As for the newly announced DLC character, Tira is a returning character who made her debut in 2005 Soul Calibur 3. Tira will be available as both a standalone purchase or as part of Soul Calibur 6's Season Pass, which Namco Bandai has yet to fully detail. Namco Bandai first revealed Soul Calibur 6 would reveal two story modes in June. Soul Calibur 6 was announced in December and will be released October 19th for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC.
Real happy to see Tira back in the game. I liked her in Soul Calibur 3 and 4, and I'm real excited to jump back into her in this new one. She looks plucky. She looks way more plucky than she sort of had a goth Lolita thing going on in a lot of the other ones, and this time she looks like weirdly chipper. But whatever. She's still rocking her ring of death, so that should be fun. I'm happy to see all the details come out about the character creation mode too. That is always like, I spent hours on those things back in the previous ones, just like making. I was mentioning today, I can't wait to make my lizard man clown samurai. The lizard man who is also a clown and a samurai.
By the way, you forgot to mention Tira's weapon.
Didn't I? Ring of Death.
Yeah. Just so you know, for those of you who don't know, it's a metal ring with three equidistant blades on the sides.
Sounds like the Kroll blade.
So. Yeah, maybe you could have your lizard wield the Ring of Death himself.
That would be so fun. You usually have to pick a character's style for them to adhere to. I wonder if you'll actually be able to craft your own styles, like with moves and everything, or if they'll just have it like they've done in the past, where you pick a character's style, and that's the style that your created character uses.
Well, my created character always used Sofita's character moves because that was the one I was the best at doing. Although it was kind of odd for this guy to just jump on someone's shoulders and snap their neck with his thighs.
I remember in Soul Calibur 3, like it was weird because like if somebody hit you hard enough, your clothes would just explode. And I don't remember.
It did that in the previous Soul Calibur game. I remember, as a matter of fact, it was part of the gameplay in which you had to knock someone's armor off to do real damage.
Yeah, because I remember I had a character that he was, like I said, a clown samurai, and he had, like, Hakama pants, but, like, also sort of Voldo's leather bodice thing. And so when his pants would get knocked off, he would just look way more gimpy.
Yeah, well, the thing is that, yeah, because armor is a part of the game. You know, you got to knock off the armor to start really doing some real damage. Or if you knock off the armor, you can do extra damage.
Right. Soul Calibur 6 is shaping up to be good. I actually had a chance to play it a bit. at Evo, and all the characters are feeling nice and fluid and real good looking.
I wonder if it's the same demo I played at E3. Probably it is.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Soul Calibur is my fighting game of choice these days. Dead or Alive just went by the wayside for me, and I've never really gotten into Street Fighter. So, yeah, I mean, Soul Calibur is my game, and especially because it has the custom characters. And I remember with the last one, people were making Wonder Woman and the Hulk and Superman and all these other by using the character creation tool.
Well, that's interesting. Are you into the idea of Dead or Alive 6?
I don't know. My last Dead or Alive game was 4, and 5 just turned me off, so it's like, I don't know.
I got to play that at Evo as well, and it's feeling strong. Like, it feels impactful. And they're bringing a lot of the old characters back. They're bringing some new ones in. Should be pretty fun.
Yeah, I haven't played Injustice 2 in a while. Man, squeeze off a few rounds this week. I wonder if I have anything waiting for me because I haven't played in a few weeks. Usually when you stay away from a game, they'll start bribing you to come back by offering you, loot. It's like, come back, we have loot waiting for you. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. We got some mail last week. Unfortunately, I had the one we just did last week, we posted late, so there wasn't enough time for people to post comments. But we did get some comments, and hopefully we'll get some more comments. We enjoy reading your letters. Write to us. It fulfills our lives. Without those letters, I feel like I have no purpose. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And we know we probably will have more Gamescom stuff because Gamescom is going on right now.
For sure.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Well, so without further ado, TJ. We do have an update of the Sunday news. Go ahead and read it.
EA cancels remaining Madden Classic qualifiers from Polygon. EA has canceled 3 remaining Madden Classic qualifiers in the wake of the recent Jacksonville shooting as the company reevaluates safety protocols around its live events. EA CEO Andrew Wilson made the announcement in a statement released earlier tonight on EA's website. While these qualifying events are operated independently by partners, we work with them to ensure competitive integrity and to gather feedback from players, Wilson wrote. We have made a decision to cancel our 3 remaining Madden Classic qualifier events while we run a comprehensive review of safety protocols for competitors and spectators. We will work with our partners and our internal teams to establish a consistent level of security at all of our competitive gaming events.
You know what? I know a great way to do a comprehensive review of safety protocols. Never do anything in Florida. Just tell Florida to go fuck itself, and we're going to take our business elsewhere. Problem solved!
I mean,
yeah, because all the violence in the world exists only in Florida.
No, but it also exists in Texas. Tell Texas to go fuck itself. Tell any state that has open carry and has no strong gun laws to go fuck itself several times and never patronize it because you're protecting your clientele. You know what you should do? Go to New York City, which has the strongest gun laws in the nation. You know, and the only guns that come there are people who attempt to bring it from, guess where? Southern states like North and South Carolina and Florida, where they can just buy guns willy-nilly. Any state that has no background check, fuck them. Just don't do business with them, you know? And then because the only way you can hurt these people is do it economically. That's what they did to Arizona when they kept on refusing to acknowledge Martin Luther King Day. The NBA said, well, guess what? We're not going to have the All-Star game there. What do you think of that? And they quickly changed their mind. You know, like I said, the only thing these people were account about is money. Although I understand that there's a new competitor who's running against Rick Scott. And what is his name? Geliode? You're Rick, the one in Florida.
Rick Scott, he's going for senator against Bill Nelson.
Okay, yeah. But there's a new governor that's
yeah. Andrew Gilliam is right. Who we're talking about, and he's not going against Rick Scott. Rick Scott is going for senator.
Good. He can lose, and he won't have anything to do. Although if he goes into if he becomes a senator, he'll be out of the way from Florida.
Yeah. And Gilliam is going against a different racist apparently who called him a monkey. So I'm sure that's going to go over well.
Well, unfortunately, from what I know about the panhandle of Florida, it will go very well with him.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there's a lot. I don't trust any voting in these southern states, which have electronic voting things, especially since there's no way to check to see if they've been tampered with.
It's paper. I cross a line and I scan it in, and then it's done. I don't.
Ours is electronic over here.
I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know.
It's Georgia that's a real problem. Anyways, moving back with the statement by EA.
Questions about security at gaming events and esports tournaments have sprung up in the aftermath of the shooting. PAX West organizers offered this statement about increased security measures to Polygon ahead of the convention this upcoming weekend. The safety of our attendees, exhibitors, and staff is paramount to ReedPop and Penny Arcade. As PAX has grown in popularity, we have responded with the addition of increased private security, law enforcement, and other personnel, each of whom are on-site at all times during our events. As a rule, we do not publicly announce or discuss the details of our security program in order to maintain its effectiveness. However, we work closely with the Washington State Convention Center Private Security, the Seattle Police Department, and federal law enforcement authorities to identify risks, assess them, and develop our comprehensive security protocols for PAX West.
Here's the thing, Washington State? There's no state permit required to purchase a gun there, and there's no firearm registration required in Washington State. You don't even need an owner license to buy a gun. And there is open carry there. And there's no assault weapon bans. There's no magazine capacities restrictions. The only thing they have really is a background check required for private sales, as a lot of fat good debt does.
We have in place extensive proactive measures, some that are visible during PAX events, and many that are not. We are always working to improve our security plans and, if need be, adjust them to ensure that we are doing all that we can to make PAX West and all PAX events a safe and secure environment for the community. Across the 15 years of PAX events, we have provided a safe and welcoming environment for more than a million attendees to come together for their love of gaming, and we are ensuring that we adhere to that tradition at PAX West 2018. Wilson did not suggest if the three remaining Madden Classic qualifier events would take place at a later date, but reiterating the focus is on investigating safety precautions and working closely with the families of Elijah Clayton and Taylor Robertson, two competitors who were killed in the shooting. Multiple other people were injured in the shooting. We are committed to supporting Taylor and Elijah's families through this difficult time. And we send our deepest sympathies to their loved ones, to those injured yesterday, and everyone affected, Wilson wrote, echoing an earlier statement from the company.
By the way, the shooter was a white guy, so the Republicans aren't really making a big deal of this. Also, the game wasn't a first-person shooter, so they don't even have that excuse to say that video game violence causes gun violence either.
There was a story recently that it was the headphones that caused the shooting.
Sure.
Because they had their dang headphones on and they couldn't hear. And it's like,
really?
Shut
because
the fuck
if I
up.
Hear a bullet, it's usually too late.
Mm-hmm. So that was one take I've seen, and then the other one was ABC7 dropping a news story that some other group is starting a tournament just like the one that involved in the Jacksonville shooting. And it's like, how clickbaity and exploitative can you fucking possibly be?
Wow, people are playing Madden. You know, the only thing that resembles a gun in Madden are the shotgun formations.
But
if he had been black, Latino, or Muslim, either had, what's it called, a call for longer gun, jail sentences, a wall, or a travel ban.
Yeah. Well, like, during when that day happened, like, the first thing that came to my mind is, like, this keeps happening and nobody does anything. Nobody. The politicians are too busy jerking each other off, finding something to blame, anything to blame besides the actual issue. A bunch of hive mind people listen to that and they go along with it. And they argue and bicker, and maybe 2 weeks pass, and it just gets swept under the rug, and nobody talks about it again. And it's fucking infuriating. And, like, I said this on Sunday, because, like, if the rules aren't going to change, then unfortunately the fact of the matter for esports is that they just have to make stronger... For esports and gaming and conventions and events as a whole, if the rules aren't going to change, then there has to be better security procedures in place. My crew and I were...
At what point does it stop being a tournament and starts being having to enter a jail?
You know, I mean, like, is that such a bad thing?
Yes, because here's the thing. You know, when you give up your freedoms... You give them up, and you give them up, and you give them up, and then you're not surprised when you have no freedoms whatsoever. When everybody's treated like a criminal, eventually they become criminals. It's like software piracy. You know, you have people who don't pirate, but they're treated like criminals. You know?
I don't think that metal detectors and bag checks are that big of a deal.
No, but then you have, you start escalating it. You know, what's next? You're gonna have airport style, you know, X-ray machines.
I mean,
how much of your freedom are you willing to give up? No, don't say no, because it'll happen. Because they won't stop the problem at the source. They'll just make you used to having gun violence. Yeah, there's gun violence, but at least we're gonna have you go through extensive metal detectors.
I mean, if the fact of the matter is
cultural.
I mean, the NRA fucking says we can't bring guns into our conference. My question to
NRA is,
why not?
Problem.
You
goddamn fixation of it's ridiculous. We have this fixation on these guns, so like we have like a fucking boner for them.
You know what I say? If you want to have a gun
and
enlist in the military, and then go into the Middle East where people have the same guns pointed back at you. People buy guns because they have other people who don't. And that's what it gives them a sense of power. It's not until their lives are in danger, you know. Take away their guns, they're cowards.
I want to go back to your earlier statement, because I think that escalation argument is an annoying one for a specific reason. I think that, like, I've had this talk ad nauseum with certain people where they say, like, where does it end? And it's like, why are we talking about where it ends? Why don't we talk about where it begins? Because we're certainly not doing enough if it keeps happening over and over and over and over again.
You know what I would like to see? If you wanna own a gun, fine. You have to go through 6 weeks of training.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how many people would not want to own a gun just because they have to go through 6 weeks of training? 6 weeks of evaluation? You're going to find out a lot about people if they're forced to be trained. You know, I mean, military personnel have to do it. Why not you?
I mean, every year in Texas, I have to go and get my car inspected, and then I have to get a sticker that says that my car that I'm able to continue to drive. And I know that's not every state. I know that's just certain ones. But at the same time, it's a thing that I have to do every year. And I mean, like, what's wrong with doing a thing where, I mean, even with certain conditions, you have to get – there's a lot of conditions in the world where you have to go and get something checked or get something done or get something re-registered every 6 months to a year. And why not firearms? Like, I have a handgun. I'm not going to take it out, but if I had to go and get a yearly check or of some kinds, like even just like a small mental evaluation in order to prove my soundness of mind, I don't think I would mind doing that because I know I would pass it. And some people argue like, yeah, but what if that can be fudged? It's like, yeah, well, what if it can't? you come up with something better as experts than I come up with something that can't easily be fudged. And that's a deterrent.
Scott?
Are you still?
Yeah. I was saying I'm still on the whole cultural fixation on guns and violence in general, and just it's a really big issue, it seems like, because, you know, they just use the whole Second Amendment as their shield, and all the while just having this, I don't know, I just feel like it's a cultural issue, and it's going to be a really long one to fix, and it's not going to be an easy thing.
Well, let's talk about gamer culture, because here's the thing. This has happened before with unstable people, especially with MMOs. Remember stories of guy who, what's it called, who was beaten in an MMO, and he goes and looks up the guy and he stabs him to death with a knife, you know?
Earlier this year,
swatted.
Yeah, earlier this year there was a swatting incident between two people that were betting on Call of Duty because they got heated at each other, and the guy gave the other guy a fake address. The address turned out to be real, and the guy A swatted that address, and an unsuspecting man who had nothing to do with anything in this argument got shot to death by SWAT because he came to his door and was demanded of compliance and the complete confusion of the situation, didn't know what to do. And it's like, that's just so stupid. It's a game. Why the hell would you kill somebody over a game?
Well, I know what you could do. You could take those two guys and toss them into jail and tell them, well, guess what? You're not coming out again.
The guy who swatted him was identified because he went and bragged about it on Twitter like a fucking idiot, and now he's serving time in federal prison. So that's a good thing. But some people aren't stupid enough to out themselves, and I wish there was a better, I guess, cybersecurity measures about that. I don't know. Like, that is getting into a little bit of breach of privacy, but at the same time, fuck those people.
Yeah, and the guys had a Twitter handle of SWAT-tastic.
Mm-hmm. But this is a story that, like, I work in esports. I work in gaming, and I work in competitive gaming specifically, and this is something that's been felt throughout the landscape. I know players that I talk to that are concerned about it. I know organizers that I talk to that are concerned about it. And like, how do you feel comfortable going to an event? I was
trying to figure out why the SWAT immediately fired at this guy. He opens his door and boom, shoot him.
Yeah. It was a stupid, chaotic, confusing situation that ended with a guy dead for something that he had nothing to do with.
And the officer will face charges.
But, like, my colleagues and some of the players that I know are like, how can I feel comfortable going to events in America to compete if I have to look over my shoulder when I'm there? And that's a real concern. It's a real concern to have to deal with that when somebody gets butt hurt and salty and loses, have to deal with that fear that they could come back. And nobody wants to think about that, but it's true. It's right there in front of us now.
I just wish they would release the name of the officer.
Oh, I was back to Florida.
I know, I'm just saying.
I think they did, but it's been a while since it happened.
No, they didn't. They gotta protect a murderer.
But, I think, like, when my crew and I were at Evo 2018 covering it, it was a thing where, like, we were looking around and there wasn't a lot of deterrent that we could see. And the Evo staff swears up and down that there's public security on hand, and then private security and undercover security. But there were no metal detectors or bag checks until the last day of finals. And that's just concerning because earlier in the year, Evo received a gun threat. And it's like, we couldn't help but look around and think, why is this so easy for us to get into? And I don't want to, like, Mr. Wiz, Joey Queller, addressed the situation, and he mentioned that there are going to be bag checks, there are going to be metal detectors, and there is going to be increased security presence at Evo 2019, which I think is a great thing. But it's just so fucking alarming, especially considering that a mass shooting happened in Las Vegas a few months, like a little bit less than a year before, at that outdoor concert.
We've had several shootings this year, and I've lost catch with how many, and I'm tired of it being the norm.
Do you know how many gun violence incidents have been to this date for 2018? Just incidents.
It's something like 243, isn't it?
No. 38,423 incidents.
What are you talking about?
9,641 deaths, 18,936 injuries. And those are just the ones reported, just so you know.
Yeah.
There have been 456 children under the age of 11 killed or injured, and over 1,900 teens killed or injured. And right now, we are standing at 236 mass shootings.
Yeah.
And the year isn't over yet. Of those shootings, only 2,400 were either home invasion or defensive use.
Yeah. And I gotta say, as far as, like, the gaming industry, players, exhibitors, writers, anyone that likes video games, anyone that works with video games, this is not something that we can not pay attention to, because it's either, like I said before, either the rules gotta change or the events have to change. It can't be nothing done. I'm sure that the businesses, like EA, the ESA, everyone is looking at this and thinking, well, it's either got to be change at the legislative level that makes this harder to do, or there's got to be increased security. But that's what it comes down to, is that, I mean, gamers got to vote. If you want to keep your events safe, you got to vote for the vote for what interests you, because the people that hold power right now are not going to do anything about it unless they're forced to.
Of course not. They're paid by the NRA, and it's not even a secret.
No, they're quite blatant about it.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to think of like. So, my wife told me the other day that the stuff like this is why I fear for you when you go on events. And, like, I'm not going to stop doing what I do because I fear some pissant loser losing control of his mind and fucking going on.
It's silly,
going
because
berserk.
You could be at a McDonald's and some guy just got dumped by his wife, and he's going to decide, guess what, I'm going to ruin some people's days in this fast food joint.
And I'm sorry, but that's what becomes of it. If that's the way you go out, you're not fucking anything but a loser. You died a loser.
Well, they don't care, because most of these mass shootings, the gun is turned on themselves. You know.
Oh, I'm sure he cared, because he cared enough to lose a match and leave and come back with a gun and shoot everybody involved.
Well, in this case, he turned the gun on himself as well. I mean, you know, I'm just talking about in general mass shootings. The person doesn't give a shit. He's going to take about as many people as he can before he takes his own life.
But that's what I'm saying, is that you die a fucking loser.
They're dead. They don't care. they can't call them names.
I'm talking
anymore.
About everybody else that would ever do that. Fuck them. They're fucking losers. And they'll die a loser, forgotten by time.
You see, the problem here is that they don't care. I mean, here's the thing. My best friend committed suicide 5 years ago while I was at E3. And he did it with a plastic bag, you know. But when you decide that you're going to end your life, you don't really think about how it's going to affect other people. You know, suicide is one of the most selfish acts you can do. And, you know, he may have told me before he killed himself that he loved me, you know, that, what's it called? But he never gave any indication until later. By the way, he also was influenced by Chantix. I just want to throw that out there, which is an anti-smoking drug, which causes, if you watch the commercial, suicidal thoughts. You know, I read this article in which a guy said, being on Chantix, he heard voices coming from his radiator. But anyways, the point is that, you know what? They don't care. They're all self... It's all self-centered. It's... You only care about how you're feeling. You know, how you are, you know, and you just can't take it anymore, and you just want to leave this life. It's unfathomable to me that you'd want to kill other people. In this case... He's deranged and psychotic and a bad loser because, you know, he got beat, you know. But a lot of people, they just snap, you know. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we can't... It's better if they snap while wielding, say, a sword or a knife. Because guess what you can do with those? You can run away. You cannot run away from a gun.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone snaps and they start running through a crowd with a baseball bat, you're going to run away from that. You know, some people are going to get hurt, but at least it's not, you know. And I love the idea, well, you should have armed guards. You know, Columbine had armed guards. Guess how much that helped?
We've had a couple of stories, actually, of unarmed men stopping armed men. I don't have them in front of me. But
well, here's the thing. In Sweden, there was this guy who snapped, and he went to a school with a machete, and the kids threw their book bags at him and
ran
off.
I saw that story. That's another one.
You can scare off a brown bear by making noise and slapping wood because they're scared of that.
Yeah.
You know, well, with a gun. You know, they're not only are they psychotic, but they're empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the worst part. And, you know, a lot of shows don't seem to understand that, you know, movies and all that stuff, like the A-Team. Here's a little-known secret. Well, it's not a little-known secret, but it seems to be one. You know, bullets keep going until they hit something.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many stories there are of people hit by stray fire about a mile away from someone getting shot?
Well, it goes 1,000 feet per second, generally speaking.
You know, that's why you don't fire in the air, because you're going to kill yourself.
Yeah. It's just the fact of, like, if we want to be able to continue doing events, like, I'm okay with paying a few extra dollars on any given event. If it means it's going to be at least that much more secure, because it's going to be like maybe a dollar, maybe a couple dollars more per ticket per person.
That's not helping, really. I mean, and
yeah, isn't
you know,
it? Because
thing.
I don't
there's,
know because nobody's doing
where
it.
Where there have been, you know, what's it called? Where there have been quote unquote security. I'm going to give you a hint. If someone wants to shoot somebody, there ain't nothing that's going to stop them. Suppose this person just decides to hide and wait outside the venue, you know, and when a couple dozen people come out, he spots them, he starts firing. You still have the same number of people getting hit. You still have the same person shooting at people. It's just not inside the venue. It's outside the venue.
Yeah, that's the argument of crime's going to happen no matter what, and I don't fucking buy it anymore.
It's going to happen. It's going
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it is
someone
going
to wants
happen
to shoot,
no matter what.
Shoot.
So why do we do anything? Why do we even bother? We should just go ahead and have no gun laws, and we should also make fully automatic weapons available.
And that's not what I'm saying.
Because,
what I'm saying is that...
And what I'm saying is fuck that argument. I'm sick of this whole, why should we bother because crime's going to happen anyway.
Well,
it's
which
because
is better?
The...
Here's a question for you. Which is better? Everybody having a gun or nobody having a gun?
Yeah, but until that second one happens, there's got to be deterrence in place to help make sure the first one doesn't happen as much.
Like I said, you know, have at least as much training on a gun as you do driving a car.
Mm-hmm.
I got sideswiped by a car 2 weeks ago, nearly killed, you know, but at least the person in the car had to get a driver's license to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And then we have these people saying, well, it's insane people. Well, here's the thing. Were they insane before they bought the gun or after they bought the gun? Because it's not like a sane... Someone doesn't remain sane 24 hours a day. You know, that's... You know, sometimes people are sane when they get the gun and they just snap.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And by the way, they're trying to repeal laws to prevent people who have been institutionalized from getting guns, so their argument falls flat there, too. We don't want insane people to have guns. Let's remove this law that prevents insane people from having guns.
Yeah. And I agree. And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be those deterrents. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be legislation, and that's what I'm going to be voting for come November, but
here's the law that you have to pass. If you accept money from any weapons dealers, you're out. You're gone. You can't run for office, ever. Just cut off the... It's all about money. Getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars from weapons dealers. You know? And it's funny because... I'm going to get into this, too. They don't care about white people having guns. They care about Latino
minorities
having guns and blacks having guns. That's the problem. You know? And like I said, let me give you a little stat. 69%, and I'm doing these statistics from memory right now, 69% of all violent crimes are committed by white males, and white males comprise 26% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't we doing anything about them?
Because the people that stand in power don't care.
Well, they're also white male.
But
I'm
I agree.
White male. I'm afraid of white people.
I agree. There, like I've believed for a very long time that there should be some sort of 6 month to yearly evaluation that you have to pass in order to legally keep your firearm.
Or how about this? At least have registration. Period. You know, let's just have no guns being able to sell anonymously at some gun show.
Yeah, gun shows are the worst. Like, it's literally it's basically literally a Wild West of just, like, putting guns and bullets on tables and yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
You know, my thing is if you really feel the need to buy a gun, first look into phalloplasty. Because if you have a tiny dick, at least do something about that first. Because a lot of these guys feel so emasculated, so helpless... You know, they need a gun to feel powerful.
Well,
I'm not saying people with guns have tiny dicks, because that's going to get me shot.
Well, and that's just an issue in gamer culture in general, is that sense of masculinity and needing to win and needing to be... And especially competitive gaming. Like, you're not as much of a man if you lose. And that's just... That's an entire... Girl. That's just an entirely other can of worms, but
here's
it is.
The thing.
It,
you know what? It doesn't matter. It's a fucking game.
Oh yeah, I know.
I'm gonna
give
you an example. Everybody... You know that fucking football coach who ran his players to death? Literally one of them. He was heat stroked, and they didn't even call an ambulance for an hour while he was on the ground because he was a pussy because he wasn't getting up to do his wind sprints. 110-yard wind sprints for a 350-pound teenager who dies from seat stroke, and they didn't even call the ambulance for an hour. You know, it's just a fucking game. You know, I know your job depends on whether you win games or not, but that's also on the booster, too. You know?
Yeah.
It's child abuse. But it's the same mentality.
I mean, I... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Scott.
again, it's this culture that we have. It's this whole dog-eat-dog world mentality that doesn't need to exist, and I don't think has ever really truly existed, except for in our own minds. And, you know, it's like we need these laws and we need the security, but also we need to change the culture, and that's a much harder task to do.
I'm going to tell you something, that really, culture ain't changing.
Not anytime soon, but...
The numbers keep going up.
Yeah.
I'm going to argue against that because, I mean, I realize that it's a daunting task. I realize that it's a near impossible task. But I'm out here every day in journalism and competitive gaming trying to prove that, like, positivity can live. You can learn from a loss. You can appreciate a person who beat you and the craft that they had behind their game. You can respect somebody that was better than you in the moment. You can become better from what you did. I mean, I'm a super competitive person. I'm playing fighting game tournaments these days, and like, it's a dream come true, but at the same time, I do lose, and it does hurt my feelings a bit. But when I lose, I think about how I lost. I often shake the hand. I mean, it's common courtesy to shake a hand and or fist bump the person that you played. But there are some friendships I've made out of wins and losses. Like, we conversate after the loss or the win, and we talk about, like, how that happened. And like, sometimes we give each other props. Sometimes we talk about, like, what a character can do. And I think that's something that doesn't have to be abnormal in gaming culture.
You know, the problem is that the human brain is not fully developed until age 25. And a lot of these gamers are well under that age. You know, and here's the problem also. A lot of gamers have not developed social skills, and they benefit a lot from anonymity. You know, they don't understand if you say something like that when you're 12, you're going to get punched in the face. You know, you learn social skills because people treat you. When you're anonymous, you can do whatever the fuck they want. And then you learn all the wrong lessons from that. And then when it's no longer anonymous, you either don't have the skills to deal with other people, or you have a warped sense of values.
Yeah, I mean, this guy that did what he did in Jacksonville, he believed that he was the best and he deserved to win. And when he didn't, he lost his shit and took it out on other people.
No, go ahead.
And that's...
There was a quote that...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that there was a quote from Star Trek, actually, that basically said that you can do a task, commit no error, and still lose. That's not, you know, failure. That's life, you know. And it seems like this is a lesson that not a lot of people seem to learn or realize, that it's, you know, it's okay. You know, it doesn't mean that you're less if you lose at something. And this guy obviously didn't feel that way. He, like you said, TJ, he felt entitled that, you know, somehow he was wrong. Then he shot people and then shot himself. And it's just such a waste.
What kind of person will say, I have to be the best or else I'll just kill myself? Because let's ignore the fact that he shot other people. He killed himself because he wasn't number one in his position, you know? I mean, TJ does a lot of ranked ranked things, but I don't think I've ever heard him say, here's the thing, you know, I've heard people like Anthony Gallegos, who does the Rebel FM, he laughs, you know, so, that, you know, he thought, what's it called, it's a good way to find yourself if you're good or not. You just play against ranked players and they squash you flat, and it's sort of like a reality check. Yeah, I'm good, but guess what? There are people on another fucking level.
Yeah. I checked my stats in Blaze Blue Tag last night just out of sheer curiosity. I'm number 66 in the entire world for accumulated wins in that game.
Nice.
Well, here's the thing with me.
That said, I have lost a lot, and I have lost to what I would call quote unquote garbage. I do not let it make me harm myself. I do not let it get under my skin. I shake it off, and I get into the next match, and I think about how I would have beaten that if I knew what I'd known afterwards.
Folks, we're talking about someone who didn't get married for 10-plus years. So obviously he has some sort of patience. A 10-year engagement, basically. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have to have a little bit of patience to do that. But for me, you know, I play Cooking Dash, right? And I was consistently number 1, 2, 3 in the world in that game. But here's the problem with Cooking Dash. It's also pay to win. So now I'm finding myself in 15th, 16th, 17th because I don't spend as much money as these people. But here's the thing. I don't care. It mm-hmm. sucks that I'm not that I'm barely making the top 15 now in the world. But then again, you know what? I also say, well, guess what? I'm also not spending as much money as these people.
Yeah, and you get to claim that even not having spent as much money, you still reach to the top of the mountain for a good period of time.
Yeah. I mean, it does give me a thrill when I do when I'm doing a tournament and on one level it shows me number one by a wide margin. Like, I'm at 5,000, number two is like at 2,500. Yeah, it gives me a little bit of a thrill until someone comes out and puts down an 8,000. It's like, oh, okay. But I'm still number two. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I don't know. I mean, I just think that there should be some, well, I'm not going to say mandatory, but I think that anybody who wants to be a gamer, go out and stop playing games for an entire day, just one day, you know? And this is what I miss, you know, millennials, I want to tell you something. Every once in a while, go to a club, get completely shit-faced, falling down drunk, borderline sexual harassment on just fucking let it all go and stop trying to be controlling. Just get shit-faced once in a while. I don't have to tell TJ to do that because he's the beer expert there. But sometimes you just gotta stop, you know, you gotta let yourself go and stop taking everything so fucking seriously.
Life is short. And
imagine if I was killed 2 weeks ago. You're not having this podcast with me.
That would be so.
And, like, I talk to a lot of players out there, people, and it's some of the coolest things I've ever heard from them is, like, if this were easy, everyone would do it when it comes to professional gaming.
That's you're quoting League of Their Own.
And
let me give you the full quote. He says, "The hard is what makes it great."
Yeah. And, like, I got news for you. No matter what game you decide to play, if you decide to play any game competitively and you think you're going to go out there and just be the top dog, I got news for you. There are thousands of people out there, if not millions of people out there, that think the same thing as you do. And they are training just as hard as you. Some of them even harder.
I hate to quote the Phantom Menace, but there's always a bigger fish.
Yeah. And there are stories of people that made it happen. But like, even the best player you know has lost and been embarrassed at some point or another.
And here's the other thing. You know what? Here's the thing. I'm famous for one thing and being number one in the world for one thing. I'm not going to talk about it, but I'm going to say this. If I became number two, I don't care because I still have it and I still get to use it. It's not like, oh, well, guess what? You got to retire and go someplace else. No. You know, if you're really good at Siege, say, or Madden, you know, if you lose, they're not going to say you can't play anymore and you're not good anymore. People are going to say you're good. You know, when you lose, you're good. I mean, here's the thing also. The best player doesn't always win. And I know TJ said that like 5 minutes ago. The best player doesn't always win.
A lot of people consider Daigo Imahara to be the best Street Fighter player in the world. And he hasn't won a major tournament in Street Fighter V at all since the game's been out. And it's not for lack of trying. The guy is good and lands in top 8, top 16, top 32 in tournaments consistently. But the fact of the matter is, all it has to be is your day. You get the right matchup, you have the right mindset, some things go your way on the fly. It has to be like to be the best in a tournament, to come out on top and be number one. Yes, it takes you having skill on your part. No. But more than that, the stars have to align for you.
Here's the other thing, too. You also have to admit other people are good, you know. And if you beat somebody, and, you know, you will know if they're good if you beat them. And all you have to say was, man, you were a challenge. I was lucky to beat you. You know, have to taunt. You know, you can just say, fuck, man. You know, because here's the thing. And here's a little selfish thing. If you admit someone else is good and you beat them, you're basically telling yourself, I was better. So, you know, but, you know, like
case
I said,
in point.
Yeah.
Case in point, I want to talk about Sonic Fox and Goichi. These are two players in Dragon Ball FighterZ that played in the finals at EVO 2018. They've had several different encounters throughout the year. And in one of those encounters, it was a first to 10 match, like a first to 10 wins match, and Goichi embarrassed Sonic Fox like with a 10-3. And do you know what Sonic Fox did? He respected it. He studied Goichi. He figured out why he lost. And then he went into EVO 2018. Had a hard match with him. Goichi almost won again. But Sonic Fox managed to change up his strategy just enough to get around Goichi's strategy and win the fucking tournament. And that's what top tier players do. They respect their threats and they learn about them.
Yeah, that's fine. But my point is that you can play against a top player and always lose to them. Lose. Never beat them. But at least, you know, you can always say, well, guess what? I hung with him. You know, it's not like he, what's it called? It's not like he consistently beats me over the head, you know, and the other person who always beats him is going to say, you know what? I have to keep practicing because, you know, this guy's going to beat me at some point if I don't keep up. That's why it fucking pisses me off that no one is making a baseball game or a football game against EA or Sony. It's sort of like they get lazy. You know, it happens in video games, you know. You know why Madden is shit? Because no one else is making a football game to compete with EA. You know, you need someone to keep you there. But here's the thing. Even if you think you're great and you find out, oh, I'm just mediocre, guess what? That doesn't mean you can't play anymore. And it doesn't mean you're not going to improve.
Don't make playing to win the only reason that you play games, because that's not what they're for.
Remember that it's not worth a life.
Winning is great. Everybody loves to win. Losing is not so great. Nobody likes to lose. But there are other things that you can take away from the game besides winning and losing. You can talk with other people about your love of the game. You can talk about what your strategies are compared to what their strategies are. You can learn something, and you can share. That's what the community should be all about, and that's what a lot of places – I mean, that's what a lot of circles I go to and associate myself with are. Sure, there's, like, the smack talker. There's the jabs. There's a little bit of taunting here and there. But generally speaking, we're all there because we like the game and we want to play the game with other people.
And your dog agrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just had to put in his 2 cents.
If you ever watch dogs play, you know when they're actually fighting or when they're just play fighting.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically what you have with gamers, you know. You can tell when someone is just, you know, joshing you, you know, so, yeah, what's it called? You know, you can take it with a grain of salt, and you know when someone's being aggressive. So, it's just, you know, I just know that, well, go ahead, because I lost my thought there. Go.
This community is something that a lot of people have... A lot of gaming communities are a lot of things that people have worked to put together for years upon years on end. And if you're going into it, go into it because you like that game, because you have the passion for it, because you want to be a part of it. Don't make the successes or failures the only defining trait behind your love of something, because that is just a sad way to live your life.
Or end it.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I mean, I what's it called? I sort of downplayed TJ saying, "Well, you're losing all that stuff." But you know, just remember, when you die, you are going to have a tombstone. You're going to have an epitaph. Just make sure it's the one that you want. You know, there's an exercise that a lot of people do, and that is write the obituary the way you want it to be written. You know, and then take a look back and see if it's realistic. You know, and just. And most of all, how you want people to remember you.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you how people are going to remember that guy, if they remember him at all, is...
You're a footnote. See, that's the problem. You didn't do any... You're now a footnote, you know. No one's going to remember you. And when they do remember you, it's going to be an asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, you know, at some point, people are going to make jokes about you, and they're not going to be kind jokes.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you love what you do, then love it. Don't get caught up in stupid, trivial things like winning or losing, because life is too short for that. Just enjoy the experience.
Scott? You're about to say something.
Yeah, I agree. Life is short and... What was it? Yeah, life is short and, you know, it's just not worth it getting fixated on this stuff. You know, there's so many things that could have gone better, and they just, you know, fixated on it. It's just sad, you know?
Yeah. So let's move on to good news. I know we weren't going to do any news, but, you know, there was one little gripe that I have, and that is Microsoft has announced they're releasing an Xbox Elite controller that's white and an Xbox that's white. And I always think, fuck good that does me. I already own one. I'm not going to trade it in.
They're releasing a new Xbox One that's white?
Yep.
Like the Project Scorpio edition?
Yep. Well, that's actually going to be the Fallout 76 edition. It's going to be completely white. They also released a separate Elite controller that's completely white, too.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, it looks very sweet, but fat good it does me. I'm not going to own two Xboxes, and I'm not going to trade in the one I have now.
I kind of wish there was something like the Xbox Elite controller for PS4, because that thing is sturdy and customizable and slick.
Don't they have something from Hori or something like that, from third party?
I don't think it's anything as good as the Xbox Elite controller. There's SCUF controllers. SCUF controllers are pretty good.
Right.
But they're still not quite as good as the Elite, in my opinion.
And they're third party.
I like Mad Catz controllers.
Yeah. I mean, I love... here's the thing with them. You know, I always love getting their little, you know, their $20 controllers, which are inexpensive, and they look cheap, but they last for years and years. It's like, you know, it's like the one I have for my PC is one that I own since 2009. So, like, that thing won't break. It's an Xbox 360 controller. It'll just last forever.
I've officially made my Pro Evolution Soccer controller my competitive controller, because that thing has been through the runner at this point. When it comes to fighting games, I need a controller, like especially the D-pad, to be a little bit loose, because if it's too stiff, I don't get the reaction time I want out of it.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. Are you excited for Spelunky 2?
Wait, Spelunky 2's been out for a bit. Where is it going?
Oh, they have new characters and online multiplayer.
Huh. Awesome. I love Spelunky. That's rad.
Yeah. It's PS4 only next year, but you know what that means. It's like, hey, you have to wait for another year.
Oh, the one I've played is just regular Spelunky.
Yeah.
This is going to be... there's a couple different versions of Spelunky, and for some reason I was thinking the version I played on PS4 was Spelunky 2, but it was just an HD remake of Spelunky. This is like a straight-up sequel.
Yeah.
Okay. Spelunky is the most infuriatingly fun game I've ever played. It is balls to the wall hard. It is completely random chance because all the levels are randomly generated.
You know, you say it's hard, but it never feels hard to me.
That's because you're having fun.
Yeah. That's the game where you're spraying paint everywhere.
No, that's the Squid Game. That's I forgot the name of it.
Splatoon.
No, Spelunky is a 2D platformer that's completely randomly generated. It's a roguelike, so you die a lot. One of my favorite things is it tells you how you died and it shows what you died from and all that stuff. The most annoying thing to do happen is if you stick around a level too long and you die that way, because that fucking ghost comes and kills you because for whatever reason you can't get through the level.
Yeah, I'm dropping an image in chat for you, Scott. You'll probably recognize
it. Scott, it's like Spelunky is about as basic a platformer as you can get, but it's also, you know, you get items like a rope and bombs that can destroy walls, and God forbid you accidentally hit the vendor, because the vendor will go shit on you. He'll take out a shotgun and hunt you all over the map.
Oh yeah, and he's fast. He's terrifyingly fast.
You can kill him though. I mean, I have killed him before, but I'm just saying you don't want to mess with him unless you're really prepared.
It does look cute.
The worst thing cute, but here's is the that thing. You'll find it strangely addictive. You keep playing it over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's real easy to die and just start over.
But you get three. You get three hit points.
Uh huh.
So TJ, it's the Dark Souls of platformers.
No, because here's the thing. Dark Souls, you have to learn patterns. In Spelunky, you just have to be smart.
Right. Or lucky.
That's the nature of roguelikes, though. It's like FTL, you know. And sometimes you'll just get wasted in three moves in. But
yeah, I've had some glorious Spelunky runs, but there is just so many different random things about it that can happen that make for a good and sometimes frustrating, but mostly enjoyable time.
But the fact that you can destroy walls adds that level. You can destroy any wall, okay? And that allows you to have some strategy, and you only have limited bombs, too, unless you buy more. Sort of like, you know, do I really want to bomb this floor so I can get to that quickly, or do I want to go the long route? You know, and deal with the bats and the spiders.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, even if the levels are randomly generated, there's a lot of, like, setup areas. Like sometimes you have a snake pit area where it's a long drop down a narrow gorge, and there's obviously a whole bunch of snakes in there, but there's also a lot of treasure. And that's the sort of risk versus reward, is how long do you stick around a level trying to get all the treasure you can get before the ghost comes up and shows up and tries to kill you.
Do you want to save the girl/guy?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's another part, is that there's someone down there, you can accidentally kill them too. If you pick them up and throw them, they knock them out.
Yeah, and there's also a sacrificial altar that you can put them on, and it gives you an item for them.
Yeah, but if they get out of the level before you do, you get bonus points.
Yeah. Like, so yes,
Spelunky is very elemental. It's like Othello. You know, it's easy to learn. It's just tough to master.
It's jump, whip, climb. That's it.
Yep. Or pick up stuff and throw them.
Mm-hmm. But, there's all sorts of little things.
I hate them.
The bats Google, the sticky gloves are the most important item of anything.
Yeah.
You get the sticky gloves, you're set for a good run.
Depends.
The sticky gloves allow you to jump at walls and jump and do wall jumps.
So I'm going to wonder, you know, you can just imagine what multiplayer is going to be like with that.
as probably as chaotic and frantic as the first one.
I wonder if they'll allow you to screw the other player over like you can in Joust.
Because multiplayer in Spelunky 1 was a shared screen. You had to be in the same area. And so that could really screw up your friends if they were either going too far ahead or going up or down some certain elevation.
By the way, the game that started a certain genre is coming to the Switch next month, and that's Towerfall. It started the entire single, multiplayer, I don't know what to call it, multiplayer just bomb fest in which it's just players enter the arena, now go nuts. And you have to pick up weapons because there's only one-shot weapons.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only game that was worth it for the Ouya.
I've seen a lot of games come out like this since then, because, like, Samurai Gun is the one I see often.
Yeah, Samurai Gun is coming out, too. Oh, there's another thing, too. Samurai Gun 2, I mean, is coming out for the Switch. Here's the other thing, is that I sent you guys finally they released the almost hour-long video for Cyberpunk 2077.
I saw it. I saw the whole thing.
What'd you think?
I thought it was extremely ambitious. Like, there's a lot of stuff you can do in that game.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me of Mass Effect, because it's going to go for that branching thing. But then you also have The Witcher behind it, so... You know, I got a sense of where it's going, you know. You could see what the main plot line is going to be. At least, I'm pretty sure you're going to work your way up that ladder of hackers. Like, you have that guy, that big black guy with the, you know, who becomes your first handler. And I'm willing to bet you that you're going to keep on getting new handlers.
Mm-hmm. It looks kind of like, you know, like Deus Ex meets Mass Effect meets...
Witcher.
I mean, yeah. It seems like the quests seem like Mass Effect, but with very much less corridors.
Well, what I'm liking is that the way you do it. I mean, in the video, you had the option of calling up the corporate person, right? But they also said, you know, you could have the option of not calling them up, and the level will change as whatever you do, you know. So there's going to be a lot of mutability to the story. Which is going to be interesting. And if you know anything about Cyberpunk 2077, it's that the more augs you get, the more you jack yourself up with cybernetics, the more likely you're going to go completely nuts and become a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure there's going to be that, because I'm wondering, what if you decide during the game that you do as little augmenting of yourself as possible? I wonder if that's going to affect the story.
I like to imagine that if they do it right, it's going to be like Vampire, where you can aug yourself less, but it's going to make the game that much harder.
Oh, of course it's going to make it harder, but I'm wondering if it's also going to make the ending that much more sweet. You know, you didn't compromise yourself.
Uh-huh.
Because you saw what happens when you go whole hog on the augs. I mean, the leader of that aug group has no eyes, has no nose, has no... He has a mouth, but the center of his face is missing and replaced with one optical eye. And you can see it's you can see his face. It's like caved in face and just that thing sticking out of it.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
And that's what happens when you go whole hog on the augs, you know. And I sort of wish they would show what they're doing to your arm when you're upgrading your arm. Because it's doing something nasty to it, but you never see it because you're focusing on what they're doing to your eye. Or they knock you out before they put the ocular implant in.
Yeah. It's going to be... If that's what we can expect for the entire game, then it's going to be cool.
Well, they did say, this is alpha, may not be like this, but I have a feeling, you know, what they're aiming for is... It's not Peter Molyneux sort of, you know... What's it called? You know, predictions. From a gameplay standpoint, yeah, they can do it. I mean, it's not that difficult.
Speaking of alpha, my favorite part of that demo was when the player character shot the thug in the legs with a shotgun, and then shot him in the head, and then after they shot him in the head, he said, "My legs!"
Well, he was saying it as he was being shot. But, yeah, I mean, his legs are completely augged. So it's sort of like, yeah, you can shoot his legs. He's going to live because it's just metal.
Well, I told my – well, no, it was alpha stuff because they blew the guy's head off, and the voice clip of him screaming his legs still played all the way out. And it was just like me and my staff had a good laugh about it. It was like, in the future, you will still be able to complain about your shot legs after your head explodes.
But yeah, it's looking good. It's looking really good. And, you know, as much as I wish I was at, because I had the opportunity, but it was taking too long, so I said, fuck it. At least I know it would have been worth the wait to watch that demo. And they held on to that demo for a very long time. I mean, July, August, like 2 months. 2.5 months, they didn't release that video.
Yeah. I kind of hope that eventually they at least apparently they were a little nervous about releasing that video too. So
I didn't want to promise too much, but like I said, you know, graphics wise, I can see if they call it back, right? But the way they're doing the story, it's no different than Mass Effect. It's no different than The Witcher, for that matter.
I really hope they release that demo for play at some point.
Oh, no. I'm pretty sure that was a vertical slice.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, like, whatever the demo was at E3, I hope they release it for play at some point. That would be fun.
Yeah. But, you know, 2020 is looking good, and we know it's going to be for whatever the next Xbox or whatever the next PlayStation is going to be by that time. Sad but true. We only have 2 more years on these consoles.
They had a good run, though.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing is that we know that it's probably going to be backwards compatible, though. I mean, you know, that's the main thing is that the Xbox One is completely backwards compatible with the Xbox One X, I mean. So they're and PlayStation's going to be doing the same thing. So at least we won't have that. I think the console manufacturers have actually heard. People don't want to give up their old libraries just because there's a new console out. Scott?
I mean, I agree. I don't want to give up my old library just for a new console. I think I've expressed that, how I like backwards compatibility, and if I'm going to do a console, I want there to be just one, and all my games work on them, since they were supposed to be the same programming language, but I know apparently there's different architectures and whatnot. Just releasing this Xbox feels like most people who want an Xbox already have it, and I don't know how well it's going to sell, because, again, I think the market is already saturated on this console.
Well, you know, the thing is that I think it's sort of like getting a 4K TV. I think they're going to be patient. You know, yeah, you can hold on to the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One for a while. We know that. At some point, you're going to say, guess what? You know, we would like to upgrade.
Yeah.
And if you do, you're not going to lose any of your games.
Yeah. And I think to a certain extent, like, I think Nintendo has the right idea in theory with what they're doing with the Switch, where it's just going to be like something where it's going to be an upgraded version with internal storage that is capable of upscaling
to
4K.
Was it announced, or was it just still a rumor?
I mean, it is still just a rumor, but if it turns out to be true, I think it's a good idea. Just make a better version of what you already have and keep making better versions of what you have that can still play the old stuff and while people make new stuff for it. That's basically what PCs have been for the last 30 years.
Yeah, but the problem is the PCs are also extremely expensive to upgrade.
Right, I know. And yes, you're right. But at the same time, just like at this point where we're at right now, these systems can already do so much. Just make better versions of the systems that can do what the systems are already doing, but better.
Yeah. By the way,
if they keep releasing like a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox One XXX, that's fine, as long as it can still play PS4 and Xbox One games, and as long as I can still play PS4 games with that stuff having been out.
There's some people that want a triple X Xbox.
By the way, we do have a follow-up to the item we were talking about last week, and that is Riot Games and their accusations of sexual harassment. They came out about it, and they said they're going to have the 7 steps to whatever. And, you know, here's the thing. I don't believe a word they say until something actually happens, you know, or the culture there changes. I'm sorry, they don't have the benefit of the doubt for me.
Yeah, and people don't just change overnight. So, like, just because you claim to be policing it now doesn't mean that people aren't going to be shitty about it.
I mean, they're going to be doing training at all levels, but my thing is, what about the top level?
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's still white guys who are running the thing, and don't tell me there aren't anybody else who can do the job, because there's plenty of people who could do the job who are qualified who left because they were hitting a glass ceiling.
Yeah. And it's a damn shame, but that's what happens when you let that environment continue to grow that way.
That's all, you know, and yeah, I don't know which it is, because they always talk about, well, we want gamers. My thing is, why? No, God, no. Yeah, you want people knowledgeable about the product, but you don't want gamers? Those misogynistic pieces of shit that you have as players? Do they know how toxic their game is?
I mean, to a certain extent, because I think of that guy that got in trouble because he engaged with one of the most toxic Twitch streamers out there and got fired for it. And it's like, that should have been, in retrospect, that probably should have been a warning sign to the rest of us.
I don't think they care. I really don't think they cared. I mean, they care about the bad PR now. You know, there's an old saying, you know, there's an old phrase, you know, they're only sorry because they got caught.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know what, like, I don't play League of Legends anymore, and I'm kind of glad I don't, because there's better games that don't make me as angry.
you mean like Overwatch? You know, did you ever read that video? This guy posted a video about, he was a formerly toxic player on Overwatch, and then he saw the light, and he had sort of this realization of what kind of person he was becoming. You know, and he had a lot of self-awareness, and he was giving advice in the video about how not to be a dickhead.
He turned 25. He had his 25th birthday. His brain developed.
I think he's in his 30s now. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Oh, I was going back to that statement you made about the brain doesn't fully develop until 25.
I remember. Yeah. That was funny. Yeah.
He turned 25 and he saw the light.
Or he wanted to actually have sex. He found that his personality wasn't attractive to women. That always makes me laugh about these young Republicans who are moaning about the fact that, for whatever reason, women don't want to have sex with them because they find out they're Republican. And my response, well, gee, do you think they're telling you a message?
Those are some of my favorite self-dunks.
What?
Those are some of my favorite self-dunks, is when they out themselves like that.
What do you mean?
Oh, like when those people, like, complain loudly about how they, nobody will date them because of the way they are. Yeah.
Well, gee, if you want a girl who's going to shut up and do what you want and just blow you for no, because she lacks self-respect, you know, you can always hire a hooker. They'll do it for pay. You better get used to it. I mean, if you want to make that money, well, guess what? The money's good for something now. And you know what? They don't even care if you leave in the morning, because they'll be gone before you are. Hookers. That's the world's oldest profession. I have a lot of sex trade friends, you know? They want your money. They do. And they don't care if you're a piece of shit, because they only have to deal with you for an hour or two.
Yeah.
If you want someone who wants to stick around with you, don't be a piece of shit.
Yeah, and I mean, I realize that I guess that isn't an option for some people. But
well, usually, when you withhold the nookie, they sort of get the message. I mean, there is an entire Greek play called Lysistrata that's all about that. Look it up, kids. Lysistrata. It's about a bunch of women in a Greek city who decide, you know what? We want our men to change, so we're just going to withhold the nookie. And it works.
Progressive for a very, 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 very old civilization.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about their other sexual habits there. We're not going to be that kind of podcast. Let's just say, keep Socrates away from your family. Anyways, before we go, let's do a quick, what have you been playing? How about you, Scott?
I've been playing more of the Graveyard Keeper game and a little bit of Minecraft.
And, so, wait, no, let's stop there for a moment. How far have you progressed in Graveyard Keeper?
Let's see. I've upgraded the cathedral 2 times, so now I have to go befriend the Inquisitor, and it seems like I have to befriend everyone. I thought maybe you could do alternate paths. But it seems to be, at a certain point, everybody makes you go interact with the other characters. And I also noticed on Witch Hill that there's 7 symbols, and so now I'm pretty sure that I have to get each of the 7 characters that correlate to that symbol happy with me to open the portal.
How's the talking goat?
So it's donkey.
Donkey, I'm donkey. Sorry. How's the talking donkey?
Oh, donkey, yeah. No, he's not one of...
I'm just
no,
saying,
he's not one of the 7.
Right. I think we discussed this in that it's sort of like an alternate reality, you know, in which you're in modern times and you get knocked out and you wake up in this place.
Yeah. Socialist right. Donkey is all about commerce. He has no interest in your personal affairs.
No.
How far have you gotten without being a spoilery guy, TJ?
So I have upgraded the cathedral once, and the main reason being that I don't want to drop too much of a spoiler, but make sure you have money after you upgrade the cathedral, because otherwise you're in for a dry season.
Oh yeah, he is an a-hole, isn't he?
Yes, that made me so upset.
I was very fortunate to have money when he said that. I was like, oh, you son of a... You know, like, goddamn.
I'm just going to say it. If you upgrade the cathedral, the bishop that owns that oversees your religious activity then tells you after the cathedral is upgraded that you need to pay 20 silver in order to continue to and get your rightful citizen papers in order to continue to give sermons, which are a big part of your income in that game. And so you end up at a situation where a big chunk of your income is taken away, and you need to generate income in order to get that income back.
Well, you know what indulgences are, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's what they were doing as an indulgence.
Mm-hmm. And it's fun. And I think I noticed what Scott was talking about, too. So there's a way that you need to get home, and it's set in like sort of a runic area, and there's these runes on that runic area that are attributed to each day and also very specific people. Like Miss Charm has the day that has the female symbol, the Inquisitor has the day that has the male symbol, Snake has the devil symbol, the pastor or the bishop has the holy symbol, and it's very much seems to be implying that like you have to do something with these days and these people in order to find a way to get back home.
Yeah, because you'll get a task for them and they'll say, oh, well, you need to go talk to Snake to find this stuff, or you need to go talk to the astrologer, you need to go talk to Miss Charm or whoever, and so you. Like, like the bishop said, you gotta go make friends with the Inquisitor, and it's just the game definitely pushes you to interact with all of them. I kept telling the Inquisitor, no, I'm not your friend, but I guess I have to be his friend.
You know what I like, though? Graveyard Keeper does have an ending. There is an end. So it's not like Minecraft, where you keep going on and on and on. There was a game, I forgot the name of it. Oh, Aquanautica? Mm-hmm. Aquanautica? It had an ending. So, you know, at least you're going to have that sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's multiple endings, isn't there? Like, multiple, you know, like, different results?
We don't know just yet. But it is worth noting. Like, I guess it would. Some would argue it hurts replayability, but it is worth noting.
I don't know
the
if
game.
It does that. I mean, I know the ending to XCOM 2, but I play it over and over again.
Oh no! But I was saying that the game pushes you to explore everything it has to offer. What Scott was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you choose a path and you go down that path. Eventually, those paths will tell you to go explore the other paths.
Right.
And, yeah, I guess that would hurt replayability a little bit in the way that, like, you're not going down one path and then you can play the game again and go down another path. But it is a good way to experience everything the game has to offer.
Now, this is not going to be a spoiler, but I'm going to say that apparently the ending to Graveyard Keeper is very sudden. And it's sort of like you worked long, long, long and hard. And so, oh, by the way, game over. No, not super sudden, but more like abrupt. It's sort of like, it's not Mass Effect 3 abrupt. It's not like, okay, you press a button, that's it, game over. But it's sort of like, whoa, that was it? Really?
Mm-hmm.
But at least the ending is satisfying, from what I understand.
That makes sense to me, because the beginning is abrupt.
Yeah.
You wake up from your coma. That's not the ending, that's what I'm guessing.
But, no, that game is fun, and, I think I would like to see if it continues to be successful, I would like to see them add on to that, because it's so fun.
Is it, is it modular, in which you could just add chunks to it, like DLC?
I feel like there's a way in which you could.
Like the town? Like add town eventually.
Or that, or like be able to do something with the fortress. The northern fortress.
Yeah.
There's a lot of areas that, like, I don't know if we just haven't gotten far enough yet, or that they just aren't used. And we won't know until we get through the game, but at the same time, it does feel like there's room for expansion, where, like, there is an ocean, and you could easily just put a ship over there and say, jump on the ship and go explore a new land.
Right. I think there are games that have done that. Fallout 4 did that, in fact. You put the expansion in, so instead of trying to carve out what was already existing, they just say, go on a ship, and you go off to Far Harbor Island. So, yeah, they could do that on this game.
For sure. Easily.
Yeah. Anyways, we've been going a long time on this for an episode that was just supposed to be an addendum. It's like one and a half of an entire episode. So,
okay.
But then again, that's what rage will do to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, we should have a podcast this week, and I will let you guys know when when the next episode of the Jonah Falcon Show is up.
Cool.
Okay.
And I will see you later. And you know what? Oh, no, wait. You can find me at... no, fuck that, because we're already doing it at the end of the podcast anyway. Anyways, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.